Welcome to another Times Union Jaguars podcast. Today is April 5th. I'm Philip Heilman, joined today by Ryan O'Halloran. Ryan, we're 3 weeks away from day one of the 2018 NFL draft.
Yeah, it's as I wrote in today's paper, which has been Thursday, it's interesting how much faster the pre-draft process goes when the team you cover plays until late January. And felt like 2 hours after the New England game, I was at the Combine, and last week we're in Orlando, and now the draft. So I mean, schedule comes out in 2 weeks, so we have a lot of things before the draft, but for the next week or so, pretty quiet around the Jaguars as they do their visits.
Yeah, you mentioned the visits. The Jaguars have had several players in. Just who's kind of been here? What have you thought about the guys that they brought in, and sort of why do you think they brought those specific guys in?
I'll give you some background for the listeners. Is each team's allowed 30 pre-draft visits, so they fly the kid in. It cannot be put through an on-field workout, but you can do a physical. You meet with the position coaches, coordinators, ownership, GM, all that kind of stuff. So it's allowed for a 24-hour period. The Jaguars like to bring in their guys pretty much all in 1 week, so like 20, 25 guys. And I asked Dave Caldwell about that a couple years ago. He said the reason is that he wants, like, for those 3 days, he wants his assistant coaches to know, hey, you're going to be doing only this for 3 days, instead of pulling them out of meeting and say, you got to meet this guy, doing that 15, 20 times. So they found a formula that's worked for them. And so they've adopted that again. But Mark Andrews is the name that jumped out, Oklahoma tight end. Orlando Brown, Oklahoma left tackle. Was it Richardson, the NC State offensive lineman, Tyrell Crosby in Oregon, left tackle. So you can tell, okay, if you want to read the tea leaves, prioritizing tight end and offensive tackle, which is sort of what we thought all along. To me, the question would be, if they draft a right tackle at 29 or even in the second round, what does that mean for Jeremy Parnell in the immediate? Do they feel like they can save some cap space to roll over and play a kid? They played a rookie in Cam Robinson at left tackle last year. Maybe they feel comfortable doing right tackle rookie this year.
Yeah, I think that would sort of depend on the right tackle. If it's somebody like Colton Miller from UCLA, you might keep Parnell around just because he's a little bit raw. Or if it's somebody like Connor Williams from Texas, a guy who you try out in camp at right tackle, but with the idea of possibly moving him to guard, that could be one thing. But yeah, if you bring in somebody who's a little bit more polished, certainly, I think rolling over extra cap space never hurts with the contracts they have coming down the pipe.
Well, especially, like, let's say they sit at 29 on that Thursday night and they trade up to take McGlinchey.
Then
to me, it's like, okay,
Parnell's gone.
That's exactly right, and that's going to be like the first question.
Right.
Somebody will probably interrupt me and say, how cool is it to get this guy? Whereas some of us will have to get to the nuts and bolts. Hey, what does this mean for Jeremy Parnell? Why was this guy graded so high that you wanted to trade up for him? So,
do you think Jeremy Parnell would have any trade value?
That we talked about that last week a little bit. Is, let's say they do that. If you're a team, you say, okay, if the Jags call, that means they're probably going to cut him. But if we want to make sure we're going to get him for a year, because he'd probably be just a 1 year guy,
right?
With his contract,
which is sort of the Brandon Albert situation from last year reversed. The Jaguars gave up a 7th round pick just to get him in the building,
And then he didn't show up to the building for a while.
Well,
so that would be the ripple effect of taking a right tackle in round one at whatever point in round one. What is this mean for Parnell?
All right, Ryan. Well, let's get right into it. We're here today to talk about the Masters. We're not. We're here to talk about
your mock draft.
All right, mock draft. If you're listening to this, the mock draft is online at jacksonville.com, and it's going to be in Friday's edition of the Florida Times. It feels like it's Friday already. Can I get to the weekend already?
Yeah, no, I almost swore. What stuck out for me about your mock draft, I thought it was very well done and well explained.
Well, thank you.
Is what do you think separate Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen from Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield?
To me, Darnold, the most polished pocket passer, can move around, throw really well. Rosen, mechanics are great. You can slot him in. He's not going to have any sort of transition. With Josh Allen, he just hasn't played the highest level of competition very often. When he did, he tended to struggle, which to me is a concern, even though he has, sort of all the raw tools that you would want. And then Baker Mayfield, just sort of the size / personality concerns that, I just don't think that he's going to be a fit for every team. I just think some coaches don't want to draft a quarterback who isn't in that 6'2", 6'3", 6'4", mold as some of those other guys. So that's why Baker Mayfield tends to drop down. And with Josh Allen, I think it's just sort of the level of competition and the concerns you have about not playing the Alabamas, Florida States, Michigans, that sort of thing.
Sure. You had Lamar Jackson not going in the first round. Hey, let's face it. Every year there's a quarterback who plummets.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't had a good lead up.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have an agent. He chose not to hire an agent, which I think was a mistake, particularly.
But Jamel Hill thinks it's not a mistake. Well, listen, sweetheart, it is.
It is a mistake. Even Mike Freeman says it's a mistake, yeah. So you know it's a mistake. For a guy, if this is, you know, Quentin Nelson saying I'm not going to hire an agent because I feel like, you know, I've shown all I need. Okay, that's one thing. But when you're Lamar Jackson, a polarizing quarterback prospect who's been asked to play other positions already, you need somebody who can sort of guide you through there. And there's already been conversations about NFL teams having a tough time scheduling visits with him and that sort of thing. So I think all of that just adding up, plus the concerns you have on the field with Lamar Jackson, I think will cause him to fall out of the first round. And I wouldn't take him. If he goes in the first round, good luck to that team. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think a team in the late 30s will say, well, we're going to, you know, try and catch a bolt of lightning here and trade up into the late first round. Maybe like a Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
I mean, that who can develop sense. Under Roethlisberger and, you know, doesn't have to play right away.
And that wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Pittsburgh picks in, what is it, I think 28. So, I mean, by that time, I have them picking Leighton Vander Esch, the linebacker from Boise State. They need one. They need a linebacker who can make some tackles after losing Ryan Shazier, but it wouldn't shock me if they took a guy like Lamar Jackson. Yeah. But I just wouldn't.
You have the Jaguars at 29 taking Oklahoma tight end Mark Andrews. Goddard and Hurst are already off the board in your mock draft. What separated Andrews from Mike Gesicki from Penn State?
Sort of just a consistency. At least 7 touchdowns in 3 seasons. I think he has, you know, not necessarily the measurables that Gesicki did at the scouting combine, but I think he's a guy who has the tools. I think he's got the size to eventually become a decent enough blocker. He has the full route tree at his disposal. He can run, you know, all kinds of different routes out of the slot. He had great synergy with DeeDee Westbrook at Oklahoma, as you mentioned in our Facebook Live earlier today. And I think that's something that the Jaguars can sort of capture some of that magic. It's a guy who has skills that nobody else on the Jaguars roster currently has. I also like Gesicki. I wouldn't be surprised if he had happened to be the choice as well. I think he'll be an early second round guy, possibly late first round as well. Not a lot separating those two guys, but I just like Andrews a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Outside of McGlinchey, is there a player that you want? Let's say the Jaguars have the ability to move from 29 to 17. Outside of McGlinchey, is there a guy who falls that you'd want to move up for?
I think it would be, you know,
Derwin James?
Yeah, possibly Derwin James. You get younger at safety. A guy who is not really a huge need, but I think was going to be really interesting is Michigan State defensive tackle Maurice Hurst. He's got a heart condition very similar to Star Lodulele, the similar heart condition that caused him to drop from, you know, a possible top 5 pick to 14 several years ago. As you start to look, the Jaguars could get a little bit cheaper at that position with the decisions to make on Malik Jackson and Marcel Darius. Hurst is a guy who I think if he's fully healthy should be a top 10 pick. I really like his film. I would go after, you know, a guy like that or a guy like Calvin Ridley. I think if he begins to slide into the 15, 16, 17 range and teams aren't pulling the trigger on him, I think, you know, that'd be an interesting guy to get out. I think he's by far the number one receiver in this class. I think he looked awesome as a freshman at Alabama, which you don't see all the time, showed great maturity there, was still good his next 2 seasons, was the best player on the field in the season opener last year against Florida State with, you know, a lot of talent in the secondary there with Derwin James, Tavares McFadden, that sort of thing. So Ridley, to me, is a game changer on offense as well.
Finish up a thought on Maurice Hurst. We talked about this on radio today. Is if the Jaguars take him at 29, he falls all the way down, they're like doing best player available.
Mm-hmm.
But then what? I mean, your defensive line group right now for active game days is the same as it was for the ASU title game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you try and shop Avery Jones with an affordable contract? Do you, I don't see them cutting Jackson or Darius because there's a reason you acquired them. So the Hurst thing would be surprising. It wouldn't, you know, maybe do you try him at big end? I mean, he's such a big man.
Yeah.
That would be a puzzling pick. I mean, you would literally have to ask them to explain why him.
Right.
And don't give me the crap about best player available.
Yeah.
How does he help you in week one?
A guy like Marcus Davenport also sort of interests me just at the defensive end position. If you said, hey, we're not interested in picking up the fifth-year option on Fowler, we want to sort of get some insurance for down the road. Guy who played at Texas San Antonio had huge production, 22 sacks, 38 tackles for loss in his career there. That would be interesting to me.
Harold Landry?
Harold Landry's another guy. Like, I have him going 18 to Seattle. Interesting stat that I put in there from the Dan Brugler draft guide. In the last four college seasons, only three players had three games with three or more sacks, and it was Miles Garrett, Derek Barnett, and Landry. Garrett obviously went number one out of Texas A&M. Derek Barnett, another guy who went in the first round to Philadelphia out of Tennessee. And then there's Landry. There's a need for Seattle, but also, you know, a lot of teams need a defensive end who's as productive as a guy like Harold Landry.
So Landry would be like the backup to Ngakoue here.
I think so.
You draft him, then you try and flip Flower.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you trade him to a team who then has, what, 3 days to decide on his fifth-year option, which if you're making the trade, you're going to pick it up.
Right.
So at the very least, you get 2 years of Dante Fowler for the cost of, you know, you probably pick up a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe something to consider for them. So,
do you think a guy like Mike Hughes might make sense for the Jags? Would you even broach that at all?
If E.J. Hayden was on a one-year deal, you know, they invested a lot in him. They clearly wanted a veteran to play that nickel spot.
Mm-hmm.
But I found Hughes's first-round selection by Philadelphia interesting because he was around the football, mm-hmm. And that's something they need out of that position.
Yeah, definitely. So he was sort of a guy that I had. I also had Stanford safety Justin Reed going number 32 at some point. Was going back and forth between those two and Josh Jackson out of Iowa. But ended up landing on
Mike Hughes.
Is he a
corner or a safety?
I believe he's going to play corner in the NFL.
Because, okay. Like, Desmond King from Iowa last year?
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to decide whether he was a corner or safety. I think Chargers took him. So as we next week, maybe we'll dive into a couple position groups, rank our top five, and, you know, last longer than a 12-minute podcast. But that's all we got for this week.
That's all
we got. Take us out, Philip.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. If you want to go back and watch our Facebook Live, it is on facebook.com/FLTimesUnion. As always, you can read us online on jacksonville.com and in print at the Florida Times Union. Thanks so much.